person who attacked me the first time. I am certain of that.
What?
He thinks I double-crossed him. I keep pacing, my gaze on the ground. A woman I believe to be a friend told him so, and she lured him in that night to the public house where I was seen. I found the evidence in his rooms. Yes, you go home and get the coach. I will check behind the house.
Not if Finley is the one who tried to murder you. What are you doing?
I'm standing in the spot where I'd seen Isla as I worked this through. It's not as if the imposter could have crept up behind her. That's the thing about townhouses. There aren't any side passages to sneak up through. Also, no side passages for her to hide in, which is why she'd been so exposed. Isla found this spot between the front steps and a shrub. It allowed her to see directly across the street, at what she must have realized, while I did not, was the window in Finley's apartment. I'd missed the window because the blind kept me from seeing it. She didn't see my candlelight after all, and presumed the dark window meant Finley was not at home. Had she been tucked in here deciding her next move? If so, had she circled the block to get in through the basement door? If she did, for any reason, head around back, then we need to get to her and warn her off. So why am I not asking Gray to do that? Why am I not telling him I'll run to his townhouse, check for her, and bring Simon with the coach? Because I am standing where she was, and my gut doesn't like it. Doesn't like it at all. She can see Finley's townhouse perfectly from here. What she can't see? Someone approaching on this side of the road.
Go check the Mews Lane, I say.
His brows rise at the order. I should reverse course, but I'm so distracted that I shoot him a very Mallory look, the kind I might give a detective partner. Our eyes meet, and there's a moment of connection that jolts through me. He blinks and rocks back on his heels. One of us needs to check, I say, quickly, before Finley returns. I want to look around here a little more. It bothers me.
Bothers you how?
Please check the back door, sir.
I meet his gaze again, my Katrina mask in place. We do not want Mrs. Ballantyne there if he comes home.
Yes, of course.
He glances down the street.
Are you safe here?
I pull the knife from my pocket.
All right, then, he says. I suppose I ought to be grateful you attempted to use the truncheon on me instead.
Knives are messy. Also, they leave distinct wound patterns.
He chokes on a chuckle at that, and then jogs off. I bend to examine the ground. No sign of scuff marks where Isla had been standing. If she'd been dragged out, I'd see marks in the dirt, and I don't. I'm being paranoid. She heard us and took off. It's a quiet night, and Gray isn't exactly soft-spoken. She's fine, she just... My gaze catches on something caught in the shrub. As I tug it out, my heart seizes.
Duncan!
I shout. Then quickly amend it to,
Dr. Gray!
He's less than 50 feet away and he wheels, running back even faster. I lift what I found. A lady's black glove.
This was in the shrub, I say. Is it hers?
He snatches it from my hand and turns the cuff out. Her initials are sewn there in ivory thread.
She could have removed her gloves, I say, and then dropped one as she left in a hurry. But it was wedged in the shrub as if she put it there.
As if she'd been surprised by the imposter. As if she'd been forcibly removed from her spot. Not dragged, but ordered, on threat of violence. She wants to leave a clue. She shoves her glove into the shrub. I tell myself that's silly. Who would find that glove? I would, when we realized she was missing, and I guessed where she'd gone. It's a long shot, but a long shot was all she had. Gray strides in the other direction, and I think I'm being left behind. He gets about 10 feet and bends. He lifts what looks like a small white pill. I get closer and see it's one of Isla's peppermints.
Isla's, I say. She is fond of peppermints.
No, Gray says, his voice a growl as he stalks down the sidewalk. She is not fond of them at all.
I jog to catch up, both of us scouring the dark ground for another spot of white. Is it not hers? I say. It looks like it. She makes her own, and it's rather distinctive.
It is hers, he mutters. A legacy from her damnable husband. He told her once that she suffered from foul breath. It was not her breath, it was her chemicals. But she got it into her head.
Got it into her head that she had halitosis and developed a habit of popping peppermints. A nervous habit. I spot another and break into a jog. I bend, but it is only a white stone. Then I see another mint a few feet away.
A trail of breadcrumbs, I say.
Gray doesn't answer. He's processing this, what it means, that his sister has been kidnapped by a killer. Except he doesn't know that. He knows Finley throttled Katrina, but that does not necessarily make him a murderer. I've mentioned nothing about Finley being the Raven killer, and I am glad of that now. One look at his face, taut with fear and anger, tells me this is enough. He is afraid for her, and yet clear-headed, the panic kept at bay.
Why would he take her? He says. I jump.
What? If Finley caught her breaking into his apartment, he would be angry, and we know he is a man of murderous temper. But if he only caught her across the road... My sister is exceptionally clever. She would have an excuse at the ready, should anyone ask why she was loitering about. I continue on, searching the ground.
Katrina?
I bend to what I know is a pebble, picking it up and then discarding it. When I straighten, his hand falls on my shoulder, gripping and turning me to face him.
What are you not telling me? He says.
Before I can say a word, his face darkens.
Findlay was involved with Evans. You were not investigating him as the man who attacked you. That may be what you found, but it is not what you suspected. We already established that.
We established nothing, sir, except that your sister is leaving a trail which indicates she was abducted and in danger.
You,
he shouts, loud enough to make me jump. He strides past me, and I spin to see an elderly man talking to someone through a window. The man turns, and even from here I can see him squinting at this tall, broad-shouldered man marching across the road. He doesn't pull back or flinch, just squints, as if not sure what he's seeing. I grab my skirts and race across. Good evening, sir, I call before Gray can say more. I apologize for the abruptness of my master's greeting. We are looking for someone, and he is quite concerned for her safety. Gray shoots a glare over his shoulder, one that says he doesn't appreciate me running interference. I meet that glare with a hard look. He's worried about Isla and angry with me for, rightly, thinking I'm holding out on him. He's about to unleash that anger on a potential witness, and I'm not letting him do that.
Ah, the man says, nodding. I presume you are looking for your wife, a red-haired lady in mourning attire?
Yes, I say before Gray can correct him. That is my mistress.
Your mistress needs to be kept home, says a voice from the window.
It's a woman's voice, though I can't see her through the glazed glass.
She is drunk.
She is unwell, the man says.
I would not speculate on the cause, and as she was dressed for mourning, I would say if it were inebriation, she has reason, poor woman.
What makes you say she seemed unwell? I ask.
She could not walk, the woman inside snaps. Needed a kind young constable to help her along.
Gray stiffens.
What?
My master means to ask whether you might please tell us more, I say. She was being aided by a young man in a constable's uniform.
He was not in uniform, but I know him, the woman says. He lives 5 houses down. Helped me with my door once when it was sticking. such a nice young man. Would you tell us which way they went? I ask.
Gray has already left, striding across the road. A hand extends from the window, waving languidly.
Please, I say to the elderly man. If it is the young man we think, average height, about my age with dark hair, our mistress may be in danger.
The woman snorts and mutters under her breath, but the man's brows knit.
They went around the corner, lass, he says, to the end and then turned right. I did think it odd that he seemed in such a hurry, but I thought he was being considerate of the poor lady's privacy.
I'm already walking away, calling my thanks as I go. Chapter 41. I hike my skirts and jog to the corner. I don't call to Gray. He'll figure it out, and I'm not going to cause a scene arguing. He catches up as I bend to see another peppermint.
The gentleman saw Constable Findlay and Mrs. Ballantyne turn this way, I say as Gray walks over.
Drunk, he mutters. They see a woman being manhandled and they presume she is inebriated.
He may have drugged her with chloroform to make her woozy.
I glance over.
Is that a thing? Chloroform as a sedative? Or is that only in fiction?
He stares at me before muttering, Yes, it is a thing, as you put it. Every young woman should know that for her own safety.
We're still on the move, scouring the ground for the next mint. How many more before she runs out? And where the hell would he be taking her?
I voice that last question aloud, adding, Is there some place private nearby? A park? Gray's long strides have already carried him 10 paces ahead.
About a half mile away, yes. As for where he is taking her, the answer is obvious, is it not? To his apartment. We have wasted time circling the block. I do not wish to leave you behind, Katrina, but I am going on ahead. Your skirts and your stature hamper you, and my sister is in danger. I bite back the ridiculous urge to take offense at the comment about my stature. He's already broken into a run.
You're wrong, Duncan, I mutter under my breath. If he was taking her there, he'd have gone the other way around. And he's not going to drag her into a house full of people.
I find another mint at the corner Gray just rounded. When I pick it up, I rise to see him 50 feet away, looking from me to the darkened Mew Lane.
He strides back.
Blast it, he mutters. I cannot abandon you.
Thanks.
He continues, as if not hearing me. You are clearly Findlay's target, and I cannot leave you behind.
Go ahead, I say. I can look after myself.
But he didn't take her to his apartment. I jog to the next mint. This one is along the walkway into the gardens behind a townhouse. I stand over it and peer up at the dark house.
Why are the shutters all closed? I ask.
He looks at me as if I'm asking why the moon is out at night.
Because...
He curses and breaks into a run, heading for the back door. I lunge and grab the back of his jacket.
Careful, I say. If Findlay is here, you can't let him know we're here.
Maintain the element of surprise. Yes.
The shutters?
They are closed because the owners will have gone away for a lengthy period of time.
And anyone who sees closed shutters knows that. Bit of an open invitation to burglars, isn't it?
Or serial killers looking for a place to torture their victims.
The door is over there, I say, pointing. Same layout as his place, presumably. He's broken in and been using it. Probably the basement.
Better soundproofing.
I continue. I can open the door. I'll ask you to stand guard there. Look for light through the shutters. Also listen for noises. Let me know if you hear any.
It's a testament to his state of mind that he no longer questions his housemaid giving him orders. He just nods, his gaze focused on the house, and then moves into position. I wait, gaze on that window, looking for any change in color. It stays dark, no light escaping through the shutter slats.
Has he blacked it out, even with the shutters, taking no chances? That would seem to suggest that this is where the imposter took Isla. The mint at the top of the steps confirms it. Is this where he tortured Evans? Pretended he was taking his friend to his apartment and brought him here instead? It's not as if Evans would know one townhouse basement from the next. He'd have followed Finley right inside. Once Gray is ready, I creep to the stairwell. I was careful before. Now I am 10 times more cautious. The worst thing that could happen earlier was that he could have attacked me. Now he has Isla. If I screw up, she'll pay the price. I check the lock. It's the same as the other one. I take the metal rods from my pocket to pick it. Then I pause at a thought, reach a gloved hand out, and turn the knob. The door opens. Finley didn't lock it. Why would he? He managed to get Isla, possibly semi-conscious, inside, and that would be a struggle when she's as tall as he is. Bothering to latch the door afterward would be the last thing on his mind. I'm not sure he'd even see the point. Who's going to come creeping around? Surely not his victim's brother and housemaid. I motion to Gray that the door is unlocked. He comes down the stairs. I don't need to tell him to move quietly. He'd had that down pat when he crept into Finley's apartment, which makes me think he's done more than help MacReady with forensics. I ease open the door so slowly it's painful, and I swear Gray's teeth grind in frustration. I strain to listen. A muffled voice sounds. Finley's muffled voice, which means it's coming through a door or wall. I nod and open the door the rest of the way, and we slide inside. As I shut the door behind us, Gray moves past me. I wildly wave for him to hold up, and to my relief, he does. I tiptoe over, and without me needing to say anything, he bends so I can speak into his ear. "He's talking to her," I whisper. "That means she's all right. We need to proceed with caution. We have time." Gray's jaw sets. He doesn't like that. This close to him, I feel both his fear and a coiled energy, a taut spring. He wants to charge in there and free his sister. Yet he knows I'm right, and so he only gives a curt nod. I squint down the hall. The setup is the same as Finley's place, though since it's a single-family dwelling, the basement seems to be mostly storage. Except his voice comes from our right, from what was the owner's storage room in his apartment. Both doors along that wall are shut. Light emanates from the second one. I point it out for Gray and get another of those curt nods. He's already noticed. As we move, Finley's voice becomes clearer. "I'm going to ask you one more time, Isla," he says. "What is your maid up to?" Isla's voice is weak, but firm. "And I will say one more time that I have no idea. You know her better than I do. She's always up to something, is she not?" "Who sent you to my rooms? Detective MacReady? Your brother?"
"Neither. I found the address in Katrina's room. I was concerned. As you know, she is a former thief, and I feared the address might indicate a future target."
Silence. In that silence, though, I catch a small intake of breath, and my gut clenches. She isn't volunteering these answers. He's torturing her. Each time she doesn't give him what he wants, he does something, and she's stifling her cries. The imposter continues. "MacReady went to your house for tea. You discuss the case. He said it was only tea, but I know better. He brings Gray into his confidence, uses him and takes the credit and keeps me out of it."
"I am certain you could have joined us if you asked."
"I did ask. He made excuses." To protect Findlay. Yes, MacReady uses Gray's help, but he's not doing it to take credit. He's doing it to avail himself of whatever resources will help solve a crime. I remember that first night, when he'd been quick to send Findlay off with a coin for a pint, giving him plausible deniability,
should anyone in the department take issue with MacReady bringing Gray into his investigation? Did the real Finley know he was being sidelined? Did he care? The imposter certainly does, because it meant he was kept out of the center of the investigation, into the crimes he was committing. Finley continues.
What did he talk about at tea?
The investigation?
A sharp intake of breath, then. Her sarcasm earned her a stronger punishment, and this time Gray hears it. His chin shoots up, eyes riveted to the door. As Isla catches her breath inside, Gray starts forward. I grab his jacket, but he jerks free. I lunge and grab it and wrench him back. He wheels on me, face contorting in a snarl.
Do you want to get your sister killed?
I whisper, as I drag him farther from the door. The look on his face is enough to make me tense for a blow. It's a murderous look, as if I'm the one holding his sister hostage, threatening her life.
I'm sorry, Duncan, I whisper, abandoning my Katrina voice. I'm sorry I can't let you go to your sister. Finley didn't just try to strangle me. He murdered Archie Evans, murdered Rose Wright. Tortured Evans, mutilated Wright. If you throw open that door, he will hurt her. I will not let you throw open that door, understand?
He stares at me, the fury draining from his face, replaced by... Oh, hell. I'm not even sure what replaces it. I only know that in that moment, I am seeing not Katrina's boss, but the man within. I see him, and he sees me, and he blinks and then shakes his head as if throwing it off.
Please listen to me, Duncan, I whisper. Whatever you do after this, fire me for insubordination or kick my ass to the curb, I don't care. I care that your sister is in that room with a guy who will kill her if we startle him.
He holds my gaze. Holds it so fast it's hard to keep from looking away. His chin dips just a little. Then he glances at the door.
We need a distraction, I whisper. Get Finley away from her without making him think someone's in the apartment. I can do that. When he opens the door, you'll be waiting.
I stop. My gaze swings to the door. A moment ago, the imposter had been interrogating Isla, but now he stopped. I take one cautious step toward the door, holding my breath as I listen, tensed for the muffled sound of pain. Instead, the knob turns. I backpedal, my arms going out to shield Gray. He's a layperson, and it's like one of those video games where cops have to take out the shooters without killing any bystanders. The principle is hammered into my brain. Protect the bystander. This works much better if the bystander is willing to be protected. I fall back, arms going up, knife in hand, and suddenly there is no one behind me. For a guy of Gray's size, he moves like a damned ghost. That knob turns, and somehow he's in front of me, and I'm backpedaling into shadow like a helpless maiden. Findlay steps out. He's heard a noise, right? Our whispering must have been louder than I thought. That's the obvious answer. But no. Findlay strolls out, the door opening to block the big guy lunging toward him, and there's a near comical moment where I think it's going to smack Gray in the face. It doesn't. Because that's when Findlay hears or senses something. He glances over, almost nonchalantly, and he sees Gray. Chapter 42. This is the moment. This is where the imposter will falter in shock, and Gray will save the day by the sheer virtue of being a big, looming shape in the darkness. It seems to happen exactly like that. The imposter falls back, eyes widening. Gray grabs him by the shirt front and hauls him off his feet, and the imposter flinches, head ducking as if to ward off a blow. Then the imposter swings. I see the glint of metal at the last second, a hammer swinging straight for Gray's temple. Before I can open my mouth, it smashes into his forehead. Gray crumples. And what do I do?
Nothing. I stay exactly where I am, and that is one of the hardest things I've ever done. The attack happened so fast that I didn't have time to burst from the shadows. I'm right where I started, backed up into the darkness, knife in hand, and when Gray goes down, I brace myself to fly out and attack. But I don't get that chance. Gray collapses, and in the next heartbeat, the imposter is behind the open door, shielded from me. I could still rush forward. That's the hard part. That I choose not to. The imposter hasn't seen me. I'm not invisible. Compared to Gray, though, I am. That's all he saw, Gray lunging at him. And between the shock of that and the relief and delight of outsmarting him, he never thought to look for anyone else. Now the imposter is behind the door, and he has Gray by the shoulders, and I stay in the shadows as he drags Gray into the room.
"Look who came to your rescue," Findlay calls to Isla. "It's your lucky day. I don't need to torture you, after all. Let's see if you'll talk when your brother is the one in pain."
The door is closing slowly. So slowly that I have time to dart to the other side and catch it with my boot toe. I wait for Findlay to notice. "Come on, asshole. You already missed a second person in the hall. You can't also miss the fact that this door isn't shutting." I want him to see it. I have my knife ready. He'll walk over to check the door, and I'll give him an even bigger shock than Gray did. He doesn't check the door. If he notices it didn't quite shut, he doesn't care. He's riding high on his success and chortling at having leverage over Isla. Leverage that may mean he doesn't need to resort to torture, which really isn't his thing. I don't want to know what he'd planned to do with that hammer, but he must have left looking for something to use it for. Maybe splints under the fingernails again. Now he's talking to Isla about how he's going to torture Gray and make her watch. And the glee in his voice could be mistaken for sadism, but I know better. His glee comes from knowing he's going to get what he wants without torture. Describing it will be enough for her to cave.
"Where should I start?" he says. "For a doctor, the hands are the obvious choice. But I get the feeling Dr. Gray values his brain more. That was quite a blow to his head. What if..."
"Stop," Isla says. "Please." She overdoes her sniffles, but Findlay buys it. After all, she's a poor Victorian widow. It's a wonder she hasn't fainted by now. I crack the door open. Then I angle myself until I can see inside. The sliver of a view is enough. Gray is unconscious on the floor. Findlay is on one knee beside him, hammer lifted to hit Gray in the head again. I can only see Isla's skirts. She seems to be on a chair just out of sight.
"Tell me what happened at tea today," Findlay says. "What does MacReady know? What did that little cow tell him?"
"Little cow? Is that me?"
"Huh."
"Katrina knows nothing," Isla says.
Findlay lifts the hammer. My breath catches, but he only holds it above Gray's head.
"You seem to be doubting whether I'll go through with this," he says. "That's unfortunate. See, the thing about repeated blows to the head is that they're unpredictable. Your brother would tell you that, if he could. If I hit him in the same spot again, it will certainly cause brain damage. It could also kill him. And I don't care. Is that clear, Isla? I don't care if he dies. Just another body to add to my count."
"Detective MacReady has a lead on Archie Evans," Isla blurts. "On why he may have been tortured."
"Tortured? Who said he was tortured?"
Isla stops.
Shit.
How little did MacReady share with his constable?
I do not know, Isla says. There must have been some evidence.
It was her, wasn't it? Katrina.
Our housemaid?
Isla's voice rises in convincing incredulity. She's been helping him. I know he escorted her as she played detective.
Perhaps, but as I said, Katrina has nothing to do with any of this.
The hammer swings down. I see it swinging, too fast to be a feigned blow, and I throw open the door and charge at Finley. He falls back. He might be faking it again. I don't really care. All that matters is that his hammer is no longer on a collision course with Gray's skull.
You wanted to talk to me? I say, as he scrambles to his feet.
He snarls an oath.
Is that a no? I say, brandishing the knife. I could swear I heard my name.
Well, something like it, at least. He shakes off his anger, finding a sneer instead.
Typical American. I'm surprised you didn't yell yippee-ki-yay, too.
I'm not American, I say. Didn't you hear me apologizing for spilling that coffee? I might as well have had a maple leaf tattooed on my forehead.
We're in a standoff.
He's 5 feet away. Gray is on my one side, Isla on my other. Gray is unconscious. Isla's bound to a chair and wisely staying quiet. Either of them makes a target, which is why I ran between the two. The imposter has his hammer, and while it isn't a gun, I'm not about to get in its path.
You seem eager to talk to me, I say.
Well, to talk about me, at least.
A little obsessive.
Kinda creepy, really, but that's you, I'm guessing.
Kinda creepy.
I'm blathering, assessing and distracting, but something there hits an unexpected mark as he blanches.
Okay, then.
Textbook serial killer behavior patterns, I continue.
I'd hope for better. More interesting, at least.
Please tell me you didn't wet the bed and torture small animals.
That swing goes wide as his face relaxes, sneer returning.
So, you are a police officer. His laughter rings hyena-like with mockery.
I thought so from the way you handle that body. All your talk about scanning the crowd for the killer.
Shit. I forgot that. He'd been watching me so intently that day. Not confused by my actions. Studying them.
That's why he's been questioning Isla about me. He realized I was a cop. A modern cop.
That made me dangerous.
He smirks. That must have been so embarrassing for you. A police officer murdered by a serial killer. You weren't even chasing me. Just out for a jog. Got yourself jumped like any silly cow.
You know what's really embarrassing? A time-traveling serial killer taken down by a teenage girl in this dress. I wave at myself.
You try fighting crime as a 19-year-old Victorian housemaid. Way tougher than killing people as a Victorian constable. You had the inside scoop and you still screwed up.
He whips the hammer at me.
Isla shouts a warning, but I'm already diving out of the way. The hammer still glances off my shoulder, spinning me around. Then a shot fires.
I think I'm mishearing. I must be mishearing.
The bullet hole in the wall says I am not. The imposter curses, and I wheel to see him with a revolver. It's an antique. Or it will be, in my day. Right now, it's probably state of the art. He lifts it again, reloaded, and I run, dodging and ducking, not giving him a clear shot.
Not such a smart-mouthed little cow now, are you? He calls as his footsteps tromp after me. Not so brave, either.
I run past the exit door as I veer into another room. I need to get him away from Isla and Gray. Easy targets for his pistol and his rage. And then what? I've brought a knife to a gunfight.
Damn it, where the hell did he get a gun?
Wherever he could, because he's a modern killer. He'll arm himself with the best weapon, which is going to be a gun.
I didn't expect it, and that's on me.
I duck around the corner. He's taking his time, each footfall thudding as he walks into the hall.
You didn't run out the door, he calls. You really are pathetic. Let's see. Which room could you be in?
How about this one?
He swings into the room where I'm hiding.
No. If I were cowering in here, where would I be?
He stops and chuckles.
I can see your boot.
He strides into the room, heading for an old settee, where my discarded boot peeks out. I crouch behind a chair, knife in hand. One chance. I will get a split second before he realizes the trick. I tense, watching him step into the room. Another step. Just two more. A shadow looms behind him, a sudden movement. It's Gray, swinging the hammer with all his might. But he's still dazed, and he puts too much into the swing, and it hits the imposter in the shoulder instead. The smaller man staggers, but stays on his feet, gun barrel flying up, a point-blank shot that he cannot miss. His finger is on the trigger, Gray at the other end of that barrel. I fly from my hiding place. I stab the imposter in the back and I aim for the heart. One chance. That's all I'll get. The knife slides between his ribs. I let go and grab his arm before he can fire the gun. I don't know if he tries, but he doesn't manage it. And the gun falls as Gray slams him backward. The imposter starts to fall. I dive out of the way and he goes down, thudding onto the knife handle, the knife driving through his chest. He hits the floor, his face contorted in a snarl. Then his entire body convulses, as if with a seizure. He jerks once and goes still for a moment. When his eyes open, I'm on the floor pinning him, in case that stab wound isn't as lethal as I expect. He stares at me. His mouth opens. Katrina? My own heart stutters. It's the same voice, but it is not the same person. Colin? I say. You have killed me, he says. I lean over him. You tried to do the same to me. I... His face spasms in pain and he shudders. It was Archie's idea. All Archie's. He said we had to scare you. Knock you out, bring you to a basement near my rooms, frighten you. Punish you. You are an officer of the law, I say. You bring criminals to justice. You don't deliver it yourself. Archie hit you and you did not pass out. You attacked me. I had to defend myself. By strangling me. I swallow my rage and force myself to say, I am sorry for what I did to you, Colin, but it did not deserve that. Do you forgive me? He says, his voice an almost inaudible rasp. You must forgive me. I don't want to. But the terror in his eyes makes me grind out the words. I understand that you did what you thought you needed to. His mouth opens, and I don't hear what he says, as I suddenly realize there's an answer here, an answer I desperately need. Colin, I say, where were you?
Gone, he whispers. I was gone.
Gone to another time? Another world? Were you another person? Where did you... Before I can finish, he exhales. And then he is truly gone, taking my answer with him. Chapter 43. We're home now. It's 2 in the morning. Isla and I are in her quarters sharing a tea tray that Mrs. Wallace dropped off, along with worried glances at Isla and accusing glares at me. She has no idea what has happened, except that her mistress came home with a dirty gown and a shock-slackened face, having endured some ordeal that has me wild-haired and blood-spattered, and Isla insisting that all is fine, that I have saved her life.
Maybe so, but Mrs. Wallace is certain Isla's life wouldn't have needed saving if she hadn't been with me. She isn't wrong about that. Gray had insisted we go straight home, leaving Findlay dead and the crime scene unguarded. It's a testament to my own shock that I let him do that. There wasn't another option, really. We were bloodied and battered and had to get home before anyone saw us and suspected Gray murdered Findlay. It wasn't as if he could ring MacReady and summon him to the scene. Everyone had been quiet on the walk. Isla and I were in shock, and Gray was still muddled from the blow, occasionally stopping on a corner as if uncertain which way to go. He'd rallied by the time we got to the townhouse and told us he'd let MacReady know that Findlay was the Raven killer, but that he seemed to be not in his right mind. He will suggest that MacReady have him posthumously accused only of kidnapping Isla and attacking us when we came to her rescue. That means MacReady is left with two murders he'll never officially solve. That will be a stain on his career. What would be a worse one? Admitting that his own constable committed the murders he'd been investigating. There isn't enough evidence to pin the murders of Archie Evans and Rose Wright on Colin Findlay. MacReady's options are a career stain or career obliteration. He deserves better than either, but the first will have to do. As for Findlay being not in his right mind, that's Gray's presumption. Earlier, I'd longed to tell him the truth. Now the case has been solved without that. He was unconscious and heard none of the conversation between myself and the imposter. Do I still tell him about myself? I want to, but I'm not sure if that's for his benefit or mine. I'll need to discuss it with Isla. I didn't get one answer I wanted. To know where Findlay went, which would tell me whether Katrina was in my body. Did the killer return to his body? Did I kill Findlay only to return the true killer to the other side, where he can continue his work? I don't know. I may have gotten another answer, though. How do I get home? I need to die in this world. If Katrina dies, I can go home. Or that's the theory. Unless the killer didn't return to his body at all. Unless his consciousness is trapped between forms somewhere. It hurts to think about that. Hurts my head and hurts my soul. I went to the spot where I crossed into this world, and I am still here. I found Katrina's attacker, killed him even, and I am still here. Now the answer seems to be to kill Katrina so I'm free to leap into my own body. My own time? I can't do that. I don't care what she's done. As I told Findlay, it didn't justify killing her. I cannot kill her. Does that mean I'm stuck here? Never to see my family again? Please don't let that be the answer. Please. I must apologize, Isla says, as she sips her tea while I sit, lost in my panic and grief. We haven't spoken since we got here. She asked me to her room and accepted Mrs. Wallace's insistence on preparing a tea tray, and then we fell silent. You warned me, she says. I did not listen. I force my thoughts back on track. I didn't warn you enough. I was going to, and I chickened out. Chickened out? Turned coward. I told myself that I needed to warn you for your own safety, but then I put it off. Made excuses, promised I'd get to it later. I look over at her. I understood that everyone is always telling you that you must not, and I didn't want to be another person putting up walls. I needed to figure out how to explain the danger without alienating you. That's an explanation, but it's not an excuse. I'm sorry. She shakes her head. It was an untenable situation. You were pointing out traps on the path, and I was seeing walls. I told myself that I knew it was dangerous and that I was sensible enough to be cautious. After all, I was standing in the open on a respectable street. What could possibly go wrong?
She shudders, and her voice drops as she says, "It's happened so fast. I should have done something, and I am ashamed that I did not."
"Stop. Seriously. You have no reason to be ashamed. I'm the cop who was strangled by a serial killer. Same thing. I knew what I was doing, but it happened so fast."
"You still stopped him."
I make a face. "After he murdered 2 people, then kidnapped and tortured you."
"My pride was the only thing truly injured."
I meet her gaze. "That's not true. You're going to have nightmares. You're going to have trauma. Even if he didn't do any lasting damage to your body, he did up here." I tap my head.
Her eyes glisten as she drops her gaze. "That was the worst. The pain was minor, but I knew worse was to come, and I was..."
She shudders again.
"Terrified. If you and Duncan hadn't shown up..."
"We did. And if we hadn't, you'd have tricked him and escaped. I'm sure of it."
"I will tell myself that. For now, we need to discuss your situation. You cannot remain as a housemaid."
I exhale. "I honestly think it's best if I do. Sure, if you want to hire a part-time maid to fill in when I'm helping your brother, that's fine. But I still need an official job, and housemaid works best."
"You would have an official job, as Duncan's assistant. You will help him, and through him, help Hugh."
"Yeah, I'm not so sure Detective MacReady is going to want my help after this mess. I'm also not convinced anyone would believe that's a real job for a 19-year-old girl." Before she can respond, I blurt, "Findlay came back."
"What?"
"At the end. When his body was dying, he came back to it. That might be my only way home. Killing Katrina, which I could never do, so..." I swallow.
"I'm trapped."
"Is that how you feel?" she says carefully.
"Trapped in this terrible place?"
I hesitate. Then I say, "It depends on the day. On the hour. I can get caught up in things here, and I'm happy. But then I remember my family, my friends. My fear that Katrina is there, hurting the people I love." I couldn't get that answer from Colin. When I asked where he'd been, he just said, "Gone." And then he was gone. She nods.
"I apologize if I sounded defensive. I enjoy having you here. I would love to visit your time. But if I could not get back, yes, I would feel trapped. No matter how wondrous it was, no matter who I might meet there."
"Exactly that. If I could go home any time I wanted, it'd be different."
"We'll figure this out. Find a way for you to get home. I have had some ideas."
A rap at the door cuts her short. She makes a face at the interruption, and she calls a half-hearted welcome. The door swings open, and Gray stands there, his expression unreadable.
"Duncan."
Isla rises.
"How did everything go with Hugh?"
"Did you know?"
he asks, still in the doorway, half cast in shadow.
"Did I know?"
she says slowly.
"You must have."
"Do you mean about Constable Findlay?" "Yes, Katrina and I did discuss the possibility."
I was unconscious at first," he says, as if she wasn't speaking. "When I came to, I was dazed, and I thought it best to lie there and pretend I was still knocked out. I heard what he said. The man who was not Colin Findlay." My gut twists, and I push to my feet.
"I can explain."
"Now you will explain." His gaze turns on me, the light catching it, and it is ice cold.
"Now that you have no choice."
He turns back to Isla. "You knew."
"She..."
I begin. "I am speaking to my sister.
asking a question that does not require an answer because I could see her face when you were talking to that man. She was neither confused nor surprised. I told myself that I was imagining it, that I was still only partly conscious and hallucinating. That is why I said nothing earlier. I was muddled, still working it through. But when I left to fetch you, my mind cleared and I could not deny what I had heard. You played me for a fool. Both of you.
It was me, Isla says. I forbade...
No, I say firmly. I made a choice. She glowers at me, but Gray cuts her off with, I would like to speak to Katrina alone. He turns that cold gaze on his sister. I insist. I agree, even as she continues to protest. I give her a look that says I want to do this. He needs to speak to me without his sister coming to my defense. I follow Gray out the door. Chapter 44. Gray keeps going down the hall, and then descends to the main level. He leads me into the funeral parlor and shuts the door. More silence as we head into the reception room. Then he turns to me and says, What year? I blink. You have traveled through time. From what year? I sink onto the settee. You want to test me? Okay, let's do this. No, I am not testing you. My sister will have already done that. He pauses and his eyes narrow. Is that what Isla said? That I would not believe you? That I am too rigid-minded to accept such a thing? I'd rather not bring Isla into this. Please. Whatever she said or did, I'm an adult. I look down at myself. Despite appearances. I meet his gaze. Like I said upstairs, I made choices. Including who you were going to share this secret with. Isla, not me. I sigh. That's not leaving Isla out of it. But I push through with... I told her because she was going to kick me out. It was a Hail Mary. He shakes his head. Fine. Contrary to what Isla may have told you, I believe your story. First, because I trust that she tested you on it, and second, because I heard that conversation. You were not trying to convince the killer of some far-fetched story. He already knew it because, if I am interpreting correctly, he is from your own time. Now, I asked the year. 2019. He attacked me in the same spot Katrina was being attacked by Finley, 150 years before. All I know is I was strangled and ended up in Katrina's body, and P ended up in her would-be killers, which I didn't realize until he attacked me the other night. So, you knew then it was Constable Finley? No. I knew my attacker was whoever tried to kill Katrina the first time. He knew I wasn't Katrina. When? When he attacked me the second time. He expected Katrina. My speech and my fighting techniques told him I was the woman he attacked in our time. That gave him the advantage. I had to figure out who strangled Katrina, and that would let me stop the person who killed Archie Evans and Rose Wright. You knew all this last night when we spoke. Isla knew your secret as well, she must have, which explains why she let you stay. I tried to talk to you in the kitchen. I stressed my openness to considering any theory you offered, and you... His jaw works. You decided otherwise. You rebuffed me. That's what he means. It's how he feels. I rejected his advances, not romantic, but personal and professional. And he is hurt. Of course he's hurt. I would be too. I made a choice. I say. I wish I could have made another one, but there's no way to weasel out without throwing Isla under the bus, which I will not do. This is the one I made. To make sure Finley was the right guy and then tell you everything. My priority was stopping him.
Because you are a police officer.
Detective. Vancouver Police Department. His gaze shudders as his voice chills a few more degrees.
You must have thought it very amusing. All my comments about what a good detective you'd make, praising you as if you were a child showing aptitude.
No. I only thought that you were very kind to me and I appreciated it.
But not enough to trust me with the truth.
It wasn't about trust, Dr. Gray. I couldn't risk telling you or Detective MacReady the truth unless absolutely necessary, because I couldn't stop the killer from inside an asylum.
I would not have done that to you.
What would you have done?
His mouth tightens as if he doesn't like the answer, and he says, I do not know.
I agonized over telling you. I did plan to, first thing in the morning. If I made a mistake, then I made a mistake, and I am sorry for that. He nods curtly, and I know I've lost ground here. So much ground. Would I make another choice if I could? Would I have told Gray in the kitchen if I had a second chance? No. This hurts. Hurts more than it should. But I had to choose between losing Gray's trust and losing Isla's. And I wouldn't throw away hers to gain his. I'm hoping you'll keep me on, I say. At least as Katrina the housemaid. Preferably as your assistant, but that's up to you. I'm stuck here until I can get home, which I will do as soon as I can figure out how.
Yes. I am sure we seem very backwards and provincial to you, he says coolly.
Not at all. But I have a life there.
How old are you?
Roughly your age, I think. 30.
A year younger. You must have family then. A husband, children.
No, and no. And if that seems odd, I'd say to look in a mirror. I've got my career and it takes up a lot of my time. Too much, maybe. But I still have a life in the 21st century. My parents, my grandmother, my friends, my job. This is temporary.
Of course.
That silence drops again, and I feel the lead weight of it. I want to keep apologizing, but I know it won't help. The damage is done, and it won't be repaired in the next hour. That makes it all the more awkward to have this conversation, where I'm asking to keep living in his house after I've done something that feels, to him, like a betrayal of his trust. No, it feels like a rejection. Duncan Gray does not make friends easily, I'm sure. He's learned to fortify himself against insult and injury, and he took a chance reaching out, and he feels rebuffed. He tentatively opened a door. I didn't shut it. I did something worse. I ignored it. I walked away as if I hadn't even seen it open. That's not what happened, but it's what it feels like to him. While I'm here, though, I'd like to help, I say. If I can. Like I said, I'll play at being a housemaid for a roof over my head and food on the table. If you really do need an assistant, though.
And what am I supposed to say to that?
He stops.
What even is your name?
Mallory. Mallory Atkinson.
What am I supposed to say to that, Detective Atkinson? That I will not allow you to help me when you obviously can. When you're ideally suited to help me advance a science I've dedicated my life to advancing. What sort of man would that make me?
I'm sorry. I just meant that I understand you feel... I struggle for a word that won't make him close off more. Insist he doesn't feel hurt at all. I start again. I lied. Misrepresented myself, withheld evidence from an investigation. I can defend my choices, but I still acknowledge that I did all that. And so you might not be comfortable working alongside me.
I'm not.
he says shortly. I won't pretend otherwise. I have been seeing you as a child, a girl trying to better herself. I still see that girl, but instead she's a woman of my own age, a professional officer of the law. And she has been that the whole time, and I feel... He inhales, as if steeling himself for an admission. I feel foolish. I feel I should have stopped long enough to wonder how my housemaid could suddenly read and write and show such aptitude for my studies and detection. Because she's clearly a time traveler, isn't going to be anyone's first or last guess. I say it lightly, trying to ease the mood, but his expression doesn't change. Perhaps not, but I feel very discombobulated, and I will need time to adjust to... He looks at me. Really looks, like he did earlier this evening when he seemed to see past Katrina to me. This time he pulls back sharply and shakes his head. I will adjust, he says, his voice still frosty. In the meantime, I can hardly turn down any assistance you might offer. I'll be careful, I say. I won't tell you anything about forensic science that could mess up history. He shakes his head, relaxing a fraction. You have an interesting idea of how science works. The other day you mentioned fingerprints. Scientists have said that fingerprints can be identifiers. They've studied the phenomenon since before I was born. That does not mean the police are willing to employ it. I cannot simply pass along whatever you tell me. I would need to prove it, which would take years, and they still would not use it within my lifetime. It could, however, help in investigating Hugh's cases. When I don't answer, he continues. You will need to keep the housemaid position, to explain why you were living in the household of an unmarried man. That would be too unseemly for my assistant, even with my sister here. We will not, of course, require you to fulfill those duties. You'll need to have me do some chores to keep up appearances, except scrubbing out the chamber pots. Please hire someone else for that. Again, I'm trying to lighten the gloom, but he only nods abruptly. As you wish. The ticking of a distant clock fills the silence as it stretches. I want to say more, so much more. But it's not the time, not yet. When a rap sounds at the back door, I swear we both exhale in relief at the interruption. Gray strides from the funeral parlor. I hurry after him to see who's come to call at this hour. When Gray throws open the back door, MacReady stands there. And for a moment, time circles back, and I'm opening the door to meet the criminal officer for the first time. I half expect to see Findlay behind him, and when I realize I never will again, a pang darts through me. Grief for the loss of a promising young officer, mingled with anger at what he tried to do to Katrina. Duncan, MacReady says. He leans around Gray and nods. Katrina, you had quite the night, didn't you, lass? I murmur something indistinct as I nod. I know it is a ridiculous hour, MacReady continues, but I need to speak to you, Duncan. It's about the case. Gray backs up to let him in. As MacReady steps inside, he looks at me. You do not need to tarry with us, lass. You have earned a decent rest. No, Gray says. I believe she'll wish to join this discussion. He glances at me. As my assistant in such investigations. Thank you, sir, I say. We head back to the funeral parlor sitting room. Would you like tea, detective? I ask. That won't be necessary, Gray says before MacReady can answer. If it is needed, we'll get it ourselves. Sit. There's a distinct air of a command to that last word, and I settle into an armchair. What seems to be the problem, Hugh? Gray says as he leans against the wall, arms crossed. Besides the fact that my constable murdered two people and tried to kill Isla? He pauses. And Katrina, of course. Gray uncrosses his arms. Apologies. I did not intend to be sharp. I am overly tired and out of sorts.
MacReady's gaze slides between me and Gray, as if he's sensing exactly where that tension comes from.
Understandably so. You have suffered a blow to the head as well, which may explain the rather muddled explanation you gave when you came to my lodgings. I was not quite awake, and I kept telling myself that your story would make more sense once I was. Yet I have taken care of Colin's remains and examined the scene, and I can only say that your recounting of events makes even less sense now, which is why I am here.
I glance at Gray, whose gaze has turned half toward the window.
Duncan, MacReady says, do you have something more to tell me? Something that will better explain what happened tonight? Something that will also tell me who actually killed Colin, because I know it wasn't you. Not unless you stabbed him while on your knees. You must think me a very poor student of your studies if you expected me to believe your story after seeing the wound.
I killed Colin, I say. I had no idea Dr. Gray intended to take the blame for that.
I pass Gray a hard look, but he's not glancing my way. I continue.
I stabbed Colin in the back because he was holding a gun on Dr. Gray.
That does not make this story any more comprehensible.
It's true, though.
Which, again, does not make it any more comprehensible.
He looks at Gray.
If there is more, I should very much like to hear it.
MacReady's tone is pleasant, his words a mere request. He doesn't ask whether Gray trusts him, doesn't remind him of their friendship. Yet Gray flinches as if MacReady had threatened to storm out the door and never return.
Gray is not a man who makes friends easily.
No, strike that. He is not a man others befriend easily. Earlier tonight, he invited me into his circle, and to him, I rejected that overture by deeming him unworthy of my secret. Is he now going to do the same to MacReady? I can hope, in this moment, that Gray understands I truly did keep quiet out of fear and to protect him, that if he keeps my secret from MacReady, it will be for the same reason. Either way, his gaze shoots to me, and I know keeping my secret is not an option. This is his oldest and most trusted friend. If we are all to work together, I cannot ask Gray to lie to MacReady for me.
We have something to tell you, I say.
MacReady visibly relaxes, as if, despite his demeanor, he had feared he might not be worthy of our secret. And, seeing that reaction, I understand why Gray felt the same way. We may keep secrets to protect others, but they will only ever feel we didn't trust them enough to share. MacReady slaps his thighs.
All right, then. I have a feeling this evening is about to get even more interesting.
You might say that, Gray murmurs. Yep, I say.
And while you told me not to fetch tea, I think I'm going to grab that bottle of whiskey from your desk, Dr. Gray. I have a feeling Detective MacReady is going to need it.
What bottle of whiskey in my desk? Gray says, his eyes narrowing. You have not been cleaning my office, have you?
Perish the thought. Isla and I have just been tippling from your bottle.
MacReady snorts a surprised laugh, and I head out to get the scotch. As I leave the room, I let out a breath, feeling some of the tension seep from my shoulders. I haven't fixed things with Gray. Not by a long shot. But I will. I'll mend the damage with Gray and I'll find a way home. Until then, I have found a place here. One I think I'm going to enjoy very much.
This is Kate Hanford. We hope you enjoyed listening to A Rip Through Time, a Macmillan audio production from Minotaur Books. This program was produced by Katie Rubitsky. Text copyright 2022 by KLA Frick, Incorporated. Production copyright 2022 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.